I'm a fun
you
guy.
You have fun when they finish below 500.
I'm just Captain Fun.
I guess.
Or a captain suit, the show from now on.
I don't like the half point.
Well, that's called the hook.
I don't like it.
What the hook?
How do you get rid of it? Can you get rid of the hook?
I'm going to have a coronary. I'm getting too old for this job, but you guys may have won.
Upset. If you look back at where the term came from, it was from a horse race. Upset.
When did you turn into Cliff Clavin?
I like this job. I've had it for a long time, Paul.
Last one.
This
point.
Is in the chemistry lab.
You're on the verge of next year's Super Bowl.
I can't help what I think. Be honest, Paulie. You're not doing this for other people's entertainment. You are truly enjoying this.
This is Orange Nation. With Stephen Fonte and Paulie Sibilia.
Good afternoon, everyone. Glad to have you with us. Alongside Paulie Sibilia, I'm Stephen Fonte. As we welcome you into a Tuesday edition of Orange Nation, we've got quite a few guests lined up for you today. Randy Miller, Yankees writer from NJ.com, will be on with us at 12:15. Yankees did something last night they haven't done all season long. Lost their third straight game.
What's that like?
We'll talk to Randy Miller about that. Best team in baseball is... He's in a little bit of a slump, little mini slump.
Fire Aaron Yankees. Boone immediately.
1 o'clock, Bill Connelly, college sports writer for ESPN, will join us. And then our good friend Aaron Solomon at 1:30, head of strategy at Esquire Digital. And we'll work in your phone calls at any time at 315-437-7644. Talking about burying the lead, coming up at 12:45, Paulie will be unveiling.
We're going to unveil at 1:45.
Oh. I'm sorry.
12:45, we're going to come up for a way we're going to unveil it.
I got you. All right.
We're going to keep people hanging on.
The mystery ball. If you've been listening to our show for the last year, it's a topic that's come up now and then. Paulie purchased a mystery ball from the Padres last year as part of a charity, right? It was like Make-A-Wish.
Yeah, you make a donation to the Padres Foundation, and they send you a baseball signed by someone.
A player. We thought it was a Padres player, but it was not last year. It was J.P. Crawford. Mystery Baseball Part 2 this year.
As Jordan called it, Disappointment Boogaloo.
Yeah. The ball has arrived, and he will be opening it up live on the air today.
Steve, they can't not... Like, we blew it up on social media that they did this to me. Like, they can't not give me a player from my favorite team. Right.
Well, they did that last year.
It's the same guy on the box, so he didn't lose his job for sending out all those mystery balls to the... Like, it made the news. It made the San Diego Union Tribune. It made the news that they were sending out
baseballs from other players, from other teams.
But the lady who got the article got a Max Scherzer. I got J.P. Crawford.
Well, we'll find out if how much job security this gentleman has. Maybe he's just like, you know what? That guy made my life miserable for a week last year. I'm going to send him Tiger.
What if they send me J.P. Crawford again? We'll come up with a way. Maybe I'll give the ball to a listener if it's not a Padre again. Maybe we'll come up with a way.
All right. I look forward to that. So we'll decide by 12:45, and then at 1:45, Paulie will open the baseball live on the air. And again, if you happen to watch us on QSportsTalk.com, or even if you don't, you want to get there. Because you can watch Paulie open the baseball and see his reaction when he doesn't get a Padre today.
If I open it up and it's not a Padre, I will feed it to Indy. Rip it apart.
Did you watch some basketball last night?
I did enjoy a little basketball. I mean, it was over immediately.
Yeah, right. I don't know how much enjoyment there was. But
I was flipping between that and the baseball last night.
18-1.
Yeah.
Game was over before it started. I thought Celtics would come out, and I expected them to win pretty handily. I was not expecting 18-1 right out of the gate. But, you know, now that series tied 2-2, and it goes back to Miami, becomes a best of three. And who knows? Like, this series has been hard to figure out, right? There's been such these pendulum swings from, you know, one team goes on a massive run, another team goes on a massive run. The games really, for the most part, have not been that close.
The Heat are done, right? They're a MASH unit now. Everybody's hurt. Hero's hurt. Lowry's hurt. You know, they're done.
I expect the Celtics to win the series. I don't know if you could say they're done because it's 2-2 four games in.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be 2-2 four games
in. No, I know, but now the Heat are done.
Okay.
They're done. Reality kicked in.
You think it's Celtics in six? Because it
could very easily be.
You think so?
Yeah. I don't think the Heat's going to win another one.
Interesting. Okay. Well, a lot of it comes down to five, because if the Celtics win game five, you figure they're going to go home and win game six. So I guess a lot of that comes down to what happens in game five.
I was kind of shocked that the Celtics gave them back home court advantage as quickly as they did, too.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I'm saying. This series has been difficult to figure out, you know. But you talk about the injuries. I mean, the Celtics are obviously banged up as well. I mean, Marcus Smart's banged up. Jason Tatum, even though he played well last night, he's obviously dealing with that shoulder injury. He's banged up. I think both sides are banged up.
You're playing to lose to the Warriors. If I'm the NBA, too, it's just like, ugh. The Eastern Conference is right now, blech. There's no star power.
I mean, Tatum's a star.
Oh, yeah.
He is. No?
I know.
You asked me this question yesterday.
But like when you have to ask that question, that kind of proves that he's not
not LeBron, okay?
Jason Tatum.
He's not Steph Curry.
He's not putting eyes on the TV in the finals. I mean, Golden State's going to put eyes on the TVs. Nobody's watching to see Jason Tatum.
I actually heard an interesting conversation on ESPN Radio today, the national show, you know, Max and Jay Will and Keyshawn. They were talking about this with Kendrick Perkins today about Steph's place in history. And maybe this is a conversation for another day, or, you know, I know the Warriors play tonight, so maybe we talk more about this tomorrow. But if Steph gets it done this year, I mean, that's four rings. He'll have as many as LeBron, right?
Right.
And he doesn't have the finals MVP yet, but let's assume he gets finals MVP this year and wins it all. You know, and Kendrick Perkins made the point, I think it's a good point, of how Steph has changed the game for this next generation. You know, his place in history, he's building up quite the resume. You know, I mean, I don't think we consider him in that same category as LeBron and MJ. But, like, when all's said and done, like, when we look back on Steph's career someday, and if you're talking, like, four or five rings.
But who would you put him in with now, though?
What do you mean by that?
Like, if you're doing top NBA players of all time, I mean, he's not in the top 10, is he?
That's the point of the argument, though, or the debate, is that you wouldn't, like, your knee-jerk reaction is no way.
He's not better than Wilt.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you're like, there's no way. But when we look back on his career, and his final chapters haven't been written yet, but we agree, best shooter of all time, yes?
Yeah.
Right? It's not even a question. Best shooter of all time, and if you're if he gets this one, that's my point, is that he's got three right now. Two of them were with KD, so right or wrong, people are going to, you know, a little asterisk next to those. Well, you know, it was KD's team. What was it, KD's team? I don't know. If he goes out and wins this one without KD, he's got four, right? And I think it starts to change the argument a little bit about Steph and his place in history.
Like,
I understand what you're saying.
But, like, I can't put him ahead of Larry Bird.
I know, right?
Dr. J.
The knee-jerk reaction is no way. But if you look a little bit closer, what he's been able to do in the modern day game, the way he's changed the game, the way he's become the best shooter of all time, at his size, I mean, it's a compelling debate at the very least. I'm not saying you're wrong. And I don't know where he goes, and I think that's something. And, you know, we're gonna have a couple weeks to talk about this because the Warriors are winning this series. The Warriors are gonna be in the finals, so we're gonna have a few weeks to talk about this. It's at least an interesting conversation to have.
Oh, you want to hear? Here's what Jordan doing a crack up job here. Here's what Kendrick Perkins had to say about Steph.
Hey Dan, JJ, I need y'all to keep a cool booty on this one and listen to what the hell I'm about to say, okay?
Cool
when
booty.
It comes down to Steph Curry, if he goes on to win another championship along with a finals MVP, one is going to put him in the top 10 conversation of greatest player of all time. Two is going to move him as the number one point guard to ever play the game.
So
that is completely wrong. Magic Johnson's the greatest.
Right. So he said that yesterday. And so what I heard today was the follow-up of him saying, listen, everybody lost their minds yesterday based on what I said. He's like, let me clarify. I thought he did a better job today kind of explaining what he meant about how Steph has changed the game. And when you're looking back on the history of the game, like, Steph's name has to be mentioned, right? I'm not talking about right present day, but, you know, 20 years from now when we're looking back on the NBA, Steph's name's got to be mentioned.
But top 10.
You're right. He's not better than Magic Johnson, you know, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. But the more he wins now, the more compelling a case he has.
He's also been on stacked teams.
Yes, he has. Michael Jordan was on stacked teams too.
Was he?
Right? Yes, he was.
It was him and Pippen and then everybody else, right? Steve Kerr, Bill Cartwright. Like, those aren't great.
I mean, Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman couldn't score.
Tony Kukoc was a pretty good player. I mean, it's him and Scottie Pippen, like, alone, right? I mean, Stephen Clay. Anytime you say Steph Curry, you say Clay Thompson. You know, Jordan and Pippen. Like, everybody's got a running
mate. They also had Durant.
I understand, which is why he needs this one to kind of further his argument, right? Because a lot of people are going to point to that, like you would say.
Ron Harper.
I know.
With the Bulls. You know, it wasn't like they were loaded like this. These teams were.
I mean, Horace Grant was a good player. Like,
good. He was good.
Yes.
He was a good player. He wasn't Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, or Kevin Durant.
Okay. Okay. And again, part of Kendrick Perkins' argument today was, yes, he did two, you know, he got two titles with Durant. He got one with Harrison Barnes. He's about to get one with Andrew Wiggins, who was, you know, Andrew Wiggins was kind of like left for dead.
He was a lottery pick.
He was number one, yeah. But it was like he's nothing. Like, he's washed up. He's no good. He comes to Golden State. He revives his career. Is that because of Andrew Wiggins, or does it have something to do with Steph and that system and that team and Steve Kerr? And like, there is something about that going to the right situation.
All right.
I don't know. You're not buying it. You're not buying it.
I think he's a top 30 player of all time, maybe.
So
top 25.
I just quickly Googled, you know, top players of all time. This particular ranking has him 12th already.
I don't know why. I just feel like I look at it as if I was building a team and he wouldn't be anywhere near who I would build a team around. Like, Magic's always been number one on my list of, if I had to build an NBA team, Magic Johnson would be number one because he can play every position on the court.
And LeBron, same thing.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm with you. Your knee-jerk reaction, that's the reason I brought it up, is because when I first heard the topic today, I was kind of like you. I was like, yeah, there's no way. Like, Kendrick Perkins said Mount Rushmore. And I'm like, there's no way he's in top four. And I still don't think you're putting him top four. But then as you like pull it apart layer by layer, like, if he wins another championship or two, you're talking about four or five, and what he's meant to the, it's an interesting conversation. At least.
I don't know. I put him in Reggie Miller's a top 25 player, and I just kind
he's
of
better than Reggie Miller.
I kind of put
in
him
history?
In that
championships
because he won championships.
And you're going to say he wasn't the main reason they won the championships.
But if Reggie Miller played on these Golden State Warriors teams, he'd be.
But he didn't.
I know.
And
I know.
Steph's the best player
on
the team.
It's just lucky. Yeah, I don't know.
It's lucky.
He hasn't always been the best player on the team. Kevin Durant was.
They had already won a title by the time KD went there.
I know. It's just, I don't know. I don't buy it.
And why did KD want to go there? Why did KD want to go there? Because the Warriors were great. Why were they great? Because of Steph Curry.
I have this reaction. Dr. J, I would take, like, I have all these old people I would take over him because it was better back then.
I know. I'm with you on that. You know, that's my knee jerk too. But present day, I mean, I'm not sure. We talked about underrated stars, Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler. Like, I'm not sure. Steph gets a lot of credit. I'm not sure he gets as much credit as he deserves. And I think this conversation is part of that, right?
I don't think his teammates get the, now that I think about it, I don't think his teammates get the recognition they deserve. Like, Draymond Green is good. Klay Thompson is real good.
He's a nice piece, Draymond. Klay Thompson's really good. Steph's the best player on the team. I mean, there's no argument, right? Steph's the best player on the team.
And if you're going like this, would you put Tim Duncan ahead of? I would.
Yeah. I mean, on this particular list I pulled up, Duncan was 11th. Steph is 12th.
Like, if I'm, like, again, if I'm building a team, Tim Duncan's going before Steph.
Yeah. LeBron, MJ, Kareem, Magic, Kobe, like, those are, right, non-negotiable, right?
Wilt, Bill Russell. Are those guys on the list? On that list?
Yeah. Wilt's 8, Bill Russell's 9. Duncan's 10. KD is 11, Steph is 12 on this particular list.
Hey, man.
Anyway, we got to get to our first guest, so we don't want to keep him waiting. I don't think this conversation is going away anytime soon. Something we could certainly revisit. Think more about it, because again, the more you think about it and you look at numbers and championships,
because there's a lot of guys that, like Hakeem Olajuwon, is better than Steph, right?
Again, you can make a compelling case that Steph should be higher on the list. Don't let Sal Manin hear that, because Sal is a big Hakeem guy.
Hakeem came, like, as soon as Jordan left, Hakeem got his raise.
Right. Hakeem's 14th on this list, by the way. Two behind Steph. In any event, Randy Miller, Yankees writer for NJ.com, joins us next on ESPN Radio.
Watch your favorite ESPN Syracuse sports talk shows on QSportsTalk.com.
Jam. Oh, jam. Jam. Titty jam for me.
This is Orange Nation.
You know this song?
I do.
It's Guy, Teddy's Jam.
I wouldn't have been able to come up with the artist, but...
Oh, you said you like the 90s R&B.
Yeah, it's a good song. Hour number two of Orange Nation underway here on ESPN Radio. Stephen Pauly with you up until 2 o'clock. As promised, we go to our guest line and bring on Bill Connelly, college sports writer for ESPN. Bill, thanks so much for coming on. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing great. So I know that you just released the updated SP Plus projections for college football. So for those who aren't familiar with it, can you kind of break down how you go about putting these projections together? What factors are involved?
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to three things. It's recent performance. So your recent SP Plus ratings is a big part of it, obviously. But then there's a recruiting piece, and then there's a returning production piece based on, well, now it's based on a few things. How much of last year's lineup do you return? And then, of course, what are you adding from the portal as part of that equation now, too? But mash it all together, you get what are generally pretty good, pretty well-performing projections on average.
I was going to ask you about the portal, because that it's been a game changer for so many aspects, right? And so how have you had to adjust these projections based on the portal? Like, how do you take that into account, a guy's production at a different school for a different program for a different head coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clumsy, but typically what's worked relatively well is just kind of mashing in a new player's production into the numerator and the denominator, so to speak. So if you bring in a new quarterback, his production now counts as part of your returning production. It's not amazing, but it seems to make the projection better than not doing it. So that's worked in the past. Obviously, though, this year especially, everything's kind of changed in that regard. Not necessarily that transfers are happening, because they've always happened, but the number of transfers, and then just the importance of transfers. But Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams and all these really high level quarterbacks and very important players, Addison going to USC, that kind of changes things a little bit. So we'll see. I didn't want to overdo it when it came to taking into account the volume of transfers. I didn't want to change everything I did, but I tried to give it a little more importance, and we'll see what happens this year and how the projections fare.
Obviously, Bill, we're coming to you from Syracuse, New York, so I wanted to ask you about the Orange. Syracuse in the projections ranks ninth in terms of returning production, and we've talked about that. Syracuse has a lot of guys coming back, but obviously they didn't fare all that well last year or the year before, for that matter. So Syracuse overall checks in 57th in the projections. How much do you think that returning production can help a team like Syracuse that struggled? They were one win away from bowl eligibility, but they got a lot coming back, including their quarterback, including their star running back, who was in the Heisman conversation for a little bit. Is that enough, do you think, to get them to a sixth win and a bowl game, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, basically, when we're talking returning production, it's not necessarily, there's the correlation between making you good or bad isn't necessarily there, but it's definitely correlated to making you better or worse. And so the teams that tend to return the level that Syracuse hits this year are, not guaranteed to improve, but very, very high chance of improvement. The question for Syracuse, of course, is what does that mean? I mean, I have them, they're projected 57th. They have... Let's see, they're actually projected favorites, though, in only four games, and two of those are toss-ups. Virginia at home, Boston College, SP Plus does not like Boston College, so that one's up for grabs. But when you look at the Syracuse schedule, you know, a couple of likely wins, probably three or four likely losses right there in a row in October and November, and then a whole bunch of toss-ups depending on how things play out, depending on injuries and everything else. So, yeah, if the new, you know, the play calling, if the new offense, so to speak, does kind of click and they generate a bit of an advantage from that, you know, there is possibility for a pretty good season, but this looks like a top 25 schedule strength overall. And so from an SP Plus perspective, it's still kind of not quite 50-50 on whether they reach a bowl or not.
Yeah, you're right. The schedule is very difficult. Notre Dame, Purdue out of conference, in addition to everything they've got to face in conference. Speaking of which, when you look at the ACC, Miami, NC State, Pittsburgh, all in the SP Plus top 20. Which of those teams do you personally think might be Clemson's biggest competition? I mean, Clemson has had a stranglehold on the ACC for the last several years. Which one of those three do you think gives them the biggest threat and could potentially surpass them this year?
Yeah, I mean, I do think Pitt, you know, obviously we know what they lost. I do think they have a chance to keep things going. That defense clicked a few years ago now. It seems like it's going to be kind of annually a very, very tough defense overall. So I like their chances, but I think it's hard for me to get past NC State at this point, just because, I mean, their defense was outstanding last year. It returns more than enough to be very good again. And then on offense, I don't know, like the run game just hasn't really ever clicked for Dave Torrett. They always want to lean on it. It never really rewards them for that. But having Devin Leary at quarterback, you know, he's able to, you know, make up ground, get those second and longs and third and longs and keep the chains moving. I think they've got a potential to be, let's see, the projected 18th. I mean, I would say top 15 is absolutely on the table there. And Clemson, you know, from a numbers standpoint, obviously Clemson, with their recent history and recruiting and all that, they're clearly going to start off ahead again. But I mean, I think we understand, like, the quarterback situation, just modernizing the offense as a whole, those aren't guaranteed to get just a ton better this year. So it could be up for grabs again. It just kind of depends on them, I guess.
How long does it take you to put together these projections? And with the transfer portal and, you know, things that seems like are always changing, how often do you update these rankings?
Yeah, I mean, basically, The hardest part of this process was early on trying to come up with the February projections and trying to figure out which super seniors were returning. That was very, very difficult. But now it's just kind of an almost daily thing of making sure you're on top of who's entered the portal or who, you know, who's committed where and all that other stuff. And I've just kind of set it up to where I can maintain the rosters as we go and then, you know, hit the button and find out what the projections are at any given time. So now it's not that bad. It's kind of a maintenance thing, but yeah, setting everything up to begin with was pretty time consuming.
You know, we've seen in recent weeks, Bill, a couple of the major conferences moving away from divisions. We saw the Pac-12 do it, the ACC. It's not official, but it sounds like they're going to move to this 3-5-5 format where they would play, you know, the same three teams every year. And then the remaining 10, they'd play 5 1 year and then the other 5 the next, so that in a 4-year rotation, they're playing every team in both locations, both home and away. What do you think about this, you know, big-time conferences moving away from the divisions and trying to truly present their two best options in the conference title game?
Yeah, it just makes too much sense, especially for teams with 14 or 16, or soon to be 16 teams, we'll say. You know, it just... It just doesn't feel like a conference otherwise. That's been the biggest thing, especially with the ACC, where the divisions were kind of arbitrarily drawn up, and you just basically, NC State, for instance, just always kind of got the short end of the stick. Anybody in the Coastal could win, but NC State happened to be in the division with Florida State and then Clemson, and so they never really had much of a chance. And that's just not a fair way of going about things. Obviously, Syracuse as well. So, you know, I think playing everybody in a short amount of time is enormous for just feeling like a conference, and then wanting your two best teams there at the end of the year, especially if we still assume that there's going to be a 12-team playoff on the horizon, which I guess, who knows at this point. I'd still guess it will happen, but it's not going to happen as quickly as some of us were wanting. So you don't want your fifth best team sneaking in and upsetting your best team, and then suddenly nobody gets a top four seed, and you know it makes things messier for your conference. You want your conference to present its best possible champion, so it just makes sense for any number of reasons. And I think the fact that the Pac-12 jumped as quickly as they did, the ACC is probably jumping. I think this is the future here. We've been. Yeah, this has been a hobby horse of mine for a while, since back in the SB Nation days. Divisions have been outdated for a while, and I'm really happy that we're finally moving past them.
You know, Bill, you brought up the name Jordan Addison. I want to kind of circle back to that topic. We know transfer portal is here to stay. NIL is here to stay. You combine the two together and you get a situation like Jordan Addison, right? I think the NIL, yeah. It seems like it was put into place so guys who are, doing well at a given university, they can benefit off their name, image, and likeness. But it almost seems like it's turned into, in some ways, free agency, right? Where I could go somewhere and I can make more money. Are you comfortable with this? Should we collectively be comfortable with this the way the rules are now and how much this is changing college sports?
Yeah, I think it took me a long time to kind of realize. Like, on one hand, absolutely, everything pro player that can't happen should happen. And we were very, college football was very, very slow in that regard to allow them to move more freely, even though coaches could, to allow them to make more money, even though all this extra money was coming in. Like, those developments in and of themselves are not bad things at all. I'm very satisfied with the fact that we're going in this direction. Problem is, I'm also what you would call a sports socialist. I always root for the underdogs. I always want new champions and new teams having a chance to move into the top five. And that is completely and totally at odds with making it more player friendly. And it's just kind of the way it is. I think, it stinks for a pit. I'm curious how much that does happen moving forward. I think the experiences that Addison and some of these players in this kind of this first generation, the experiences they have when they move, that'll kind of impact whether it continues to happen or how much it happens or whatever. But I think, if you're a Pitt, for instance, like the law of the land is now going to be like your best players might get plucked away, but you better be ready to do the same thing to, the best players from, the MAC or the Mountain West or even FCS or whatever. And just that cycle is going to continue. And as long as you, land as many punches as are landed on you, it should be okay. But yeah, it does stink for Pitt, especially in this case.
Yeah, it's like the food chain, right? It's the survival of the fittest.
Exactly.
Have players poached from your program, you got to do the same to somebody else. Bill, great stuff. Really informative. Thank you for coming on. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good.
All right, Bill Connolly from ESPN. And with that, we'll take a timeout.
In a second.
Before we do, Paulie's got something to say.
Blues, Brews, and Barbecue coming up Saturday.
It's this weekend.
Clinton Square, get your fannies out there. Look at that. I made a little rhyme. There's no better way to kick off the day with the Blues, the Well Care Blues Brews and Barbecue Festival presented by One Group, headlined by the Devin Allman Project in Clinton Square. It's going to be a good time. Lots of blues, music, food. I believe there's over 15 food vendors there, Steve.
20, I believe.
And get this. You can bring your own chairs so you can sit down and enjoy the Blues Brews and Barbecues in your chair, because if you're old like me, you want to sit down, enjoy the heat.
Me too.
First 1,000 people through the door get a bottle of aqua water. It's a new brand of water, so you get a free water.
Stay hydrated.
Kids under 12 are free, so if you want to bring the kids, be a good time for all.
It's a good deal.
Get your kids into the blues early and into the barbecue. You know, nothing like sticky fingers on a kid.
We talked Blues Brews and Barbecue on Bridge Street today, and I was told 20 food vendors will
be
there.
You get better info than I do.
It was on my card. I trust what's on my card. So it sounds like a great event.
It will be. We always put on good events, Steve.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right. Time out here. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
ESPN 97.7 and 100.1. Watch live on QSportsTalk.com.
This is Orange Nation.
Oh, a little De La Soul.
Yes. Hey, how you doing?
All right, Paulie. So for our listeners who didn't get to see on QSportsTalk.com.
The Ball of Disappointment continues. The second annual Ball of Disappointment. I got Jurix and Profar. He is a Padre.
He is a Padre. So they made right.
Yes, I got a Padre.
They made it right. They gave you a Padre.
He
career...
Was one-
Career 235 batting average.
Was once a great prospect who didn't quite pan out for the Rangers in athletics. But I do have a Padre. We'll do it again next year because it's I donate money to a charity. It's a good thing to continue. The ball of disappointment.
And I know you probably don't you don't want to brag about this. I thought it was nice, though. You told me before the show, it's $100. You get a ball. You also get tickets. And you
I donated my tickets. To someone that couldn't afford them in San Diego.
I think that's great. So, well done. And you've got, are you going to keep the ball?
Yes, that'll go amongst my Padre memorabilia.
Excellent.
So it's a little less disappointing. Maybe next year we up it and we get a All-Star. They had, I believe, six All-Stars on their team last year. And I could have maybe gotten one of them.
Wait, if they literally sell the All-Star ones, then what makes you think you're going to get one without buying the All-Star?
What do you mean?
Oh, I thought there was a different tier. I thought you were saying there was a higher tier.
No, he's hoping that, you know, he went from non-Padre to Padre. Now he's hoping he takes a step up and gets somebody who's actually good.
Yeah, I get Manny Machado, Tatis, someone like that. Yu Darvish.
Ooh. All right.
Bugs Be Gone is the Fernando Tatis of pest control, I'm hearing. If you do need help removing pesky pests from your home or your workplace, you can visit bugsbegone.biz. It's even easier than getting a Padres mystery ball, folks. Bugsbegone.biz with two E's, just like the bug, just like the amount of mystery balls which Paulie has now bought. And then bug is what I do to Steve and Paulie on Orange Nation. Boom, bugsbegone.biz.
Ryan Mullen. Hey, this is inside the Padres office. Hey, intern, sign this ball for some Padres fan that isn't important. Got it. Knocked it out of the park. There you go.
It is true. If you didn't see it, like it's written once in script and then it's written once just printed.
Well, yeah. That'd be funny if they like just had they wrote who was supposed to sign on the ball and then the guy just signed it. No, I'll put it. It'll go right next to my Adrian Gonzalez and Greg Nettles and Tony Gwynn balls and my Randy Jones that I have in my office at home. So
oh, wait, that dope Paulie couldn't figure out who it was last year. We better write it in plain font.
All right, we are out of time. That was fun. We're back at it noon tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of the day, everybody.